Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Now, the state of marijuana across New England. In case you haven't noticed, the laws are changing. Possession of a small amount of pot is no longer a crime in Massachusetts. Medical marijuana will soon be available in Rhode Island and Maine. And just this week, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court handed advocates of more liberal pot laws a major victory. More on that in a moment.
But first, according to a recent Gallup poll, 46% of Americans favor legalizing marijuana outright. Still a minority, but support for legalization is growing. Moreover, 61% of young people age 18 to 29 support it, and 70% of all Americans support legalizing marijuana for medical purposes.
Yesterday was April 20, 420, the unofficial holiday of pot smokers everywhere. Here in Boston, marijuana proponents took to Boston Common, where many of them smoked pot openly. Since the passage of Ballot Question 2 in 2008, possession of less than an ounce of marijuana is just a civil offense, like a parking ticket, punishable by a simple fine.
My name is Meg. Today is 420, and I came to celebrate and show solidarity with my fellow smokers. I didn't want to risk, you know, for a joint, going to jail. You know, it's a bit crazy to go to jail for a joint, and I'm glad that they did that.
My name is Thomas Chevalier, and I came to celebrate with some friends and burn a little green. People want to legalize it, that's great. I haven't gotten in trouble for having marijuana, smoking marijuana, so as far as I'm concerned, whatever laws they want to make is cool with me. I'm still going to burn.
Voices from yesterday's pro-pot rally on Boston Common. In today's talker, we're asking, has the tide turned on marijuana? Is it inevitable that some form of legalization will be widespread across America soon? And if so, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Join our conversation. You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK.
Well, as you heard a little earlier, Anthony mentioned that advocates for the liberalization of marijuana laws in Massachusetts won a major victory earlier this week when the Supreme Judicial Court issued a ruling that could significantly curtail the enforcement of marijuana laws. Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa is here to explain. Hi there, Adam.
Hey, Magna.
So what was this SJC case all about?
Okay, it's June of 2009. It's a nice summer afternoon. A couple of cops are patrolling in Hyde Square in Jamaica Plain, and they see a car parked in front of a fire hydrant, right?
Okay.
So that's what catches their eye.
Illegally parked, maybe.
Exactly. Okay. So they see it. They see in the passenger seat a 19-year-old kid that they recognize from the neighborhood named Benjamin Cruz, and he appears to be smoking a blunt. That's what it looks like to them. They approach the car, and they smell what they describe as the faint scent of marijuana. And on that basis, they then ask Benjamin Cruz and the driver to exit the vehicle. They're both kind of twitchy, and they ask Benjamin Cruz, do you have anything on you? And he says, I got a little rock for myself. And he produces a small amount of crack cocaine out of his pocket. In the paddy wagon he goes, and off he goes. Okay, so here's what's remarkable about this. In order for the police in Massachusetts to ask you to exit your vehicle when they pull you over for a traffic stop, you have to meet – the situation has to meet one of three criteria, right? The first is there just needs to be a practical reason to get you out of the car, like the car is on fire.
Right.
Or it's a 15-foot monster truck, and you know they can't really talk to you from there. Okay, practical reason. No practical reason in this case that the court could identify. The second criteria is the safety of the officers. Is there a reason to think that the officers are going to be putting themselves in danger by approaching your car?
Uh-huh.
Court didn't see any justification of that here because the officers didn't observe any kind of weaponry.
The guys were just sitting there.
Yeah,
they're
sitting in the car. They weren't known gang members, or at least they weren't known impact players. So they didn't meet that criteria. The third criteria is probable cause to believe that criminal activity is taking place inside the car.
Okay.
Right? Okay. And here's the thing is that what the court said on Tuesday is that just smelling marijuana is no longer probable cause or indication of criminal activity because you can't tell from the smell of marijuana how much marijuana is producing the smell.
Because in Massachusetts, as of question two, possession of less than an ounce
is decriminalized. Exactly.
So you can't tell how much an ounce smells like.
Precisely. You know, it's still against the rules, but it's not a crime. Just like having the car parked in front of the fire hydrant was not a crime.
Okay.
You know, you could get a ticket for it, but it was not a crime. So that's what they ruled, and that's a big deal.
And so what does then that ruling mean, I guess, for law enforcement?
It means that police in Massachusetts can no longer search your property or order you out of your car or search your person solely on the basis of having smelled marijuana smoke. And we are now the only state in the nation in which that is the case.
Okay, so I can imagine that police officers out there are just thinking, okay, so what if I see smoke billowing out of someone's car? I mean, what do I do then? So what's been the response?
We told you so. You remember that, you know, when the question two debate was going on, some of the most vocal opponents of decriminalizing an ounce or less of marijuana were the Police Chiefs Association in the state, the DA's Association. And this is one. This ruling is exactly one of the things that they warned about. It was one of the sort of nightmare scenarios that they postulated could happen, that their backs would be tied and their ability to enforce the law would be tied. So basically the reaction is, we told you so.
Okay. So, and I guess beyond that, I mean, it's, what a fascinating case. But beyond that, because as we mentioned, the possession less than an ounce has been decriminalized in Massachusetts. So how has that been going?
Has it been shaken out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the big unknown going into this was that law enforcement was saying that it's going to be impossible for us to enforce these civil tickets, these civil fines for possession of less than an ounce of marijuana. And I called around to multiple police chiefs yesterday and today, and a lot of them said that's been the case. It's been very difficult to enforce these because it's not like a ticket you get. It's not like a parking ticket where the DMV can mess with your registration or your license if you don't pay it or anything like that. Enforcement mechanism is very complicated and not very useful. That said, there are some police chiefs who have been handing out the tickets and report some success collecting on them by using the small claims court.
Okay. Well, let's turn from recreational marijuana to medical marijuana, Adam, if we can for a second. Rhode Island, Maine, and Vermont have all passed medical marijuana laws. Massachusetts next?
It's a good question. There have been bills in the legislature for, you know, the last several sessions, and there is a new one in this now fresh legislative session. The advocates of medical marijuana have lined up quite a raft of support behind them, from the Mass Nurses Association to the Mass Bar Association. They have that support behind them. And therefore, it's kind of a little surprising that the measure hasn't seen a little bit more support on Beacon Hill. Folks will point to Representative Jeffrey Sanchez, who's the relevant committee head. He's a JP state rep. He's the relevant committee head on the House side in whose committee this sits, as being a potential roadblock to advancing medical marijuana in Massachusetts. But we'll see what happens this session. You know, it's been cooking for a while.
Cooking, so to speak.
So to speak.
Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa, thank you so much.
Oh, you bet.
We're going to spend the next few minutes now hearing from two other states, Rhode Island and Maine, which are close to setting up the first medical marijuana dispensaries in New England, and where there are now efforts to legalize or at least decriminalize marijuana as well. Joining us now from Providence is reporter Megan Hall, who covers healthcare for WRNI. Hi, Megan. Good to have
you. Hey, Anthony.
Great to have you. And from Portland, Susan Sharon, reporter and deputy news director from the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Hi, Susan. Great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. Megan, let me start with you. So Rhode Island legalized medical marijuana in 2006, then in 2009 amended the law to allow the state to license these so-called compassion centers to dispense the herb. Tell
exactly
us how these compassion centers will work.
Okay, well, the idea is that you can only go into one of these compassion centers if you have a medical marijuana card. And you get a medical marijuana card when you go to a doctor and they recommend that medical marijuana would be useful to you. You have to have belong on a list of certain ailments, chronic diseases. That goes on to the health department and they say, yep, you get a card. So then you have to designate your caregiver. And caregiver is the word we use for the people who supply you marijuana. Mm-hmm. It used to be that a caregiver was just an individual who had permission from the state to grow marijuana for patients. Now you can either designate one of those people or you can designate one of these compassion centers. So you have to actually say, yes, I want to get my marijuana from this medical marijuana retail store, and I'm going to be getting it from them.
I see. Now, I understand, Megan, so we're about, 3 months away from the first of these compassion centers to actually open? Is that correct?
Well, we'll see. I know that you're going to be talking about Maine's situation. They received their permission to open up compassion centers, or what they call dispensaries, last year, and they're still getting going. So some people have predicted that they'll open in the fall or mid-August, but sometimes these things take a little longer than you think. The health department is low on staff, and they're still trying to figure out a system for how people can sign up and designate these compassion centers as their caregivers. And before they do that, if they don't do that, then people can't sign up to designate them as their caregivers, and the compassion centers can't grow marijuana until they have patients.
I see. So some administrative hurdles yet to get across. Susan,
yes.
Sharon, up there in Portland, give us a sense of what's happening in Maine, where I gather marijuana dispensaries are on the verge of opening. Is that correct?
They are on the verge, but as you say, there have been a few months of delay. We have a system similar to what was described in Rhode Island. We have a limit of eight dispensaries. They're set up by region, and it was based on a competitive bidding process. That some of them ran into some hurdles with municipalities passing temporary moratoriums on establishing them there, so they've had to get around that. But by next month, we should have the first couple of them opening up. We do have one already that is on the road, so to speak, taking marijuana to patients who are authorized by the state. Similar situation. You have to have you have to be registered with the state, whether you're the dispensary or the patient. You have to have a doctor's authorization, and you have to fall within an approved category of medical conditions to be authorized.
Mm. So that's the situation with medical marijuana. What about efforts to decriminalize pot or even legalize pot in Maine? Where do those efforts stand, Susan?
Well, I say about the past decade, we have had efforts to decriminalize marijuana. Right now, if you can possess up to 2.5 ounces, it's a civil offense, so you just pay a fine. 2.5 to 8 ounces is a Class E crime, so that means 0 to 6 months in jail would be the penalty. There were a couple of bills introduced this session to further decriminalize marijuana for 5 ounces and under, but those were unanimously rejected in a committee. Interestingly, though, we did have just yesterday a kickoff campaign for a bill to legalize and tax the commercial sale of marijuana at 7%. There's a lot of interest in that bill, but it's unlikely to pass. The attorney general, who's a former drug prosecutor, is opposed to it. The Maine Drug Enforcement Agency, the Maine Chiefs of Police Association, and for reasons that have been brought up around marijuana before, it's still illegal at the federal level. People are worried about public safety issues if they're going to have to be pulling drivers over who are under the influence of marijuana, etc.
Sure. Now, Megan, down in Rhode Island, I understand that Governor Chafee has proposed a sales tax on the sale of medical marijuana. What's the thinking there, and how
right.
are people
well,
reacting to that?
Well, like most states, we're having a hard time financially, and Governor Chafee has actually introduced a lot of proposals to expand the sales tax, so he wants to tax things like hairdressers and landscapers and things like that. So this taxing of the compassion centers is part of that larger proposal. But unlike landscaping or hairstylists, the medical marijuana community doesn't have such a gigantic lobby. So it's likely that this is going to pass. They're a pretty easy target. And because they're just opening up and they're pretty vulnerable already, they haven't put up that much of a fight. What he's proposing is a sales tax, not only for the medical marijuana, but he's also proposing a surcharge on the profits of the compassion centers. And it's not clear exactly where his numbers are coming from, but he's expecting that the surcharge alone will generate about $500,000 for the next fiscal year. So anything that can bring money into the state is pretty welcome right now.
Megan Hall, who covers healthcare for WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it, Megan.
Thank you, Anthony.
Good to hear you. Susan Sharon, I just want to ask a sort of broad, big picture question to you. With everything that's going on, the SJC decision that we talked about here in Massachusetts, medical marijuana up there in Maine, Rhode Island, efforts to decriminalize, even to legalize, are we seeing the beginning of a consensus, do you think, here, or possibly a sort of a shift about marijuana and the so-called war on drugs and the old thinking behind it? What do you think?
I think that we are. I think that even, you know, even yesterday when this state legislator came out with her bill to legalize marijuana, you know, she was cheered even by some people who are not ready to embrace the concept of legalizing marijuana. They're saying, hey, give medical marijuana dispensary system a shot first. But they're saying, look, she's opening the conversation up about what some would say is a failed war on drugs. And keep in mind that in Maine, and Vermont ranks second, I believe, Maine has the highest rate of people seeking treatment for prescription drug abuse in the country. So, you know, people here die of overdoses at a higher rate than they are killed in car accidents every year. And some doctors are reporting that they're treating addicted teens who abused prescription drugs before ever drinking alcohol or smoking pot. So, you know, the idea that we're spending millions of dollars prosecuting and incarcerating people for possession of marijuana every year, the jails are overcrowded, the state budgets are strapped, people are questioning why the war on drugs hasn't worked and whether drug policies are due for a major overhaul. Mm.
Susan Sharon in Portland, Maine, stand by. I want to bring another voice into the conversation. It's pleased to welcome here in the studio Stephen Epstein. He's the treasurer of MassCAN, the Massachusetts chapter of NORML, and that's which supports legalization of marijuana. And Stephen Epstein, good to have you. Thanks for coming
in. Good to be here, Anthony. Thank you.
Let me ask you the same question. Are we seeing a shift in the ground here, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. After 22 years of working at it, there is definitely an attitude shift. The recent Gallup poll that was mentioned earlier in the show is just one of many. A couple have actually shown, at least on the coasts, the East and the West Coast, that a majority support legalizing marijuana.
And now, in terms of NORML's goals, you're hoping to get an initiative for outright legalization on the Massachusetts ballot for 2012.
We are exploring that possibility. There's maybe a technical hurdle we have to get over under the Massachusetts initiative process in the Constitution, and then if we get past that hurdle, there's a question of raising the money to do it.
I see. Well, listeners, there's one of the questions. Is that a good idea? Medical marijuana supported by lots of folks across the country as well as in New England. What about the outright legalization of marijuana? Or what other questions do you have about the state of marijuana in New England? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. Let's go to Bob, who's calling from South Boston. Hi, Bob.
Hi there.
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Well,
I'm in my mid-20s. I'm epileptic, and through my onset of epilepsy, I've developed a pretty serious anxiety disorder. And so I've through all the years of enduring dealing with this, I've dealt with prescription medications, and I have really not been a fan. And so I was introduced to medical marijuana. I use it regularly on a daily basis in a very metered amount, and it's something that helps with epilepsy. I no longer have seizures. It's been about 6 years. I no longer get breakthroughs or auras, which is a part of being epileptic, which is sort of a pre-seizure, and my anxiety has diminished. Yeah,
so it's working for you. So it's working for you medically. Clearly, what about further liberalization of these kinds of laws? What do you think of that?
Well, I'm not sure if we're there yet necessarily. I'm an advocate for the legalization of it. I don't think that anybody who is smoking marijuana should be a criminal. I think that there's a lot of people out there who will really take advantage of the system. I think we see that in Colorado and in California, where they have issues with people taking advantage. Calling it medical when it's not necessarily medical. I think that that's sort of a product of the prohibition itself.
Right. But it sounds like you're coming down a little bit in the middle. Favor medical marijuana, but perhaps not opening the door completely to recreational. Bob, thanks so much for the call. I want to bring another voice into the conversation. With us from Washington, D.C. is Ernie Istook. He's a former congressman from Oklahoma, now a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation. And Ernie Istook, thanks for joining us. Sorry we had trouble establishing the connection with you earlier. Let me just jump right in here with this same question to you. Do you think we're seeing a sort of shift in the ground across the country? 13 states have decriminalized pot. 16 states and D.C. have some sort of medical marijuana provision on the books. Is the tide turning?
Well, this is part of an orchestrated and deliberate effort to achieve the long-term legalization of marijuana, taking it step by step, trying to tell people first, oh, it's decriminalization or it's medical marijuana, and downplaying or, frankly, trying to ridicule the warnings, such as your program described earlier when the police chiefs and law enforcement people said you're creating an impossible situation with the manner in which these laws have been drafted, which have so many deliberate loopholes in them. You know, I was just looking at the website. I used to handle the funding for the Office of National Drug Control Policy, and I was just looking at their website and looking at even the recent statements. This is from Gil Kerlikowske, of course, is what we typically say is the drug czar. And he was telling California police chiefs last fall that, you know, marijuana continues to have the legalization continues to be a non-starter with the Obama administration. The health consequences, the dependency that is generated on it, the memory loss and other mental health effects, the social costs, which will far outweigh any supposed revenue for marijuana, and, of course, the fact that it's not necessary because without getting in the hundreds of harmful substances that are within the marijuana smoke, you can achieve the same medical efficacy through a prescription drug that's been available for, oh, maybe almost 20 years or so, called Marinol, ingredients, the THC, without getting into all the adverse effects that come from marijuana smoke.
All right, you put a lot on the table there. Let me get Stephen Epstein to respond to a couple of points there. Stephen.
Tetrahydrocannabinol is not the only medically active ingredient in herb, and many medical users prefer the measures of not just tetrahydrocannabinol, but the other cannabinoids that take some of the edge off of the tetrahydrocannabinol. The DEA's own administrative law judge back in the 80s found it to be the safest therapeutically active substance known to man.
I don't know who is this so-called administrative law judge back in the 80s.
Administrative law judge Kennedy. Of course the administration.
Substitutes for all their other findings.
Sir, I didn't interrupt you.
Okay, hold on. Let's keep it civil. Stephen Epstein, just finish your point, and then we'll let Mr.
The point is that marijuana is now the most studied herb on the planet. You cannot find any smoking gun that justifies under the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of the Commonwealth, which are both dedicated to the proposition that we are entitled as individuals to pursue happiness as we see our happiness to be gained. If you ethically believe that marijuana use is wrong, then preach against its use. Don't criminalize it. By criminalizing it, prohibiting it, and this year Massachusetts celebrates next Friday, it's the 100th anniversary of having started to control commerce in cannabis. You take the prohibition out of it, you're talking about something that is going to cost less than lettuce. There will be no profits to be made on it. There will be, therefore, no violence involved in it. And if the states don't make money off of it, well, that's okay by us at MassCann Normal and at Normal.
I want to get a couple of...
I think everything he's saying is an argument for legalizing all drugs, not for marijuana. Seems to be his premise.
You know what? I want to get some callers in here. I know you guys are going to disagree about just about everything you say, so let's just get a couple of callers in and then pick up the debate. Tina is calling from Westford. Hi, Tina.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I work as the substance abuse prevention coordinator for the town of Westford, and I've been doing this for about 15 years. And what I see as the main problem with the focus on legalizing medical marijuana is that the main focus of our work in prevention is to keep young people from starting a dependency on marijuana and, of course, underage drinking. And the more we can do to prevent young people from starting at an early age is going to keep them off of addiction path when they get to be older. All the evidence-based science research shows that the earlier kids then start using any kind of drugs, alcohol, prescription drugs, or marijuana, the more likely it is that they will form an addiction when they get older.
All right, Tina. Well, I'm glad you put that on the table. We're going to come back to that. I want to get one more call in from Matt, who's calling from Stowe. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I strongly recommend legalization and taxation of all forms of drugs for several reasons. One, as a libertarian, I do not believe it is the government's role to tell people what they should and should not put in their own bodies. And if the Republican is really a conservative, he should feel the same way. We should not be testing people. We should make money off this, not spend the $10 to $15 trillion a year we spend on the failed war on drugs, propping up dictators in South America and doing other horrible things. We can make money instead of spending money.
All right, Matt, I'm glad you put that on the table. So there are two very different points. Ernie Istok, let me get you to pick up Matt's point. Enforcing marijuana prohibition costs billions of dollars a year. That should bother conservatives like you. How come you're in favor of it?
Well, actually, and again, I'm going to refer to the findings of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, even in the Obama administration, that the societal costs far outweigh the enforcement costs. People sometimes use a false measure when they say, let's only count what it counts for law enforcement rather than what you make sure that you save in people actually being able to report on the jobs, not becoming dependent upon other drugs. And, you know, the idea that you can tell young people, oh, marijuana is medicine, that is seen as one of the reasons why drug use among young people, after declining for decades, is now on the increase. When people try to recategorize and reculturize things and say, oh, it's just medicine, and so therefore it's okay for you. That's one reason we have so much abuse of prescription drugs as well as abuse of marijuana.
Now, Stephen Epstein, I want you to respond, if you could, to the caller who talked about it as, you know, sending the message to young people that drugs are okay. And, you know, what's your response to that?
Well, I've raised three daughters, and parents are the best anti-drug. Parents need to be informed, and they need to watch what their children are doing. And yes, they shouldn't allow their children to smoke, and they shouldn't allow them to drink, and they shouldn't allow them to get a hold of marijuana or get into their medicine cabinet. Whether the law is prohibition or whether the law is regulation like alcoholic beverages, and nobody in their right mind is arguing going back to the noble experiment of 1920 to 1932 in this country. That would be insane, and that's how organized crime got its start in this country, with making millions upon millions of dollars. But there are better ways than criminalizing conduct that 50% of the adults in this country have engaged in their lifetimes. If marijuana had all of these horrible social consequences, they would be showing up. The horrible social consequences are a result of prohibition, of tainted herb, of people ripping off dealers, of wholesalers assaulting retailers to get their money because they can't take them to court. Those are the bad social consequences, the same bad social consequences we saw in states that went along with the federal prohibition between 1920 and 1932. It's kind of amazing that New York State, which legalized alcohol shortly after they prohibited it, had none of the violence associated with Detroit, none of the violence associated with Chicago during the Noble Experiment. We need to think outside the box. I'm surprised that somebody who is a fellow at a place like the Heritage Institute can't find his way to think outside of the box and say, it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked for 100 years. It's not going to keep working, and we all know what Einstein said about doing the same thing over and over.
Stephen, I think you made your point.
Let's for legalizing all drugs, which I can respect more than some people who try to make backdoor arguments saying, oh, we're only doing it for medical purposes, when their real objective is overall legalization.
Anthony,
and frankly,
I respond?
They create systems that are designed to fail, as we're seeing from this Massachusetts case.
Hmm.
I don't think it was a failure at all. I think the court did the right thing, and those police officers should have issued the operator of that motor vehicle a citation.
Well, the police officers were warning that this would happen, that it would hinder their ability to enforce enforce anti-drug laws. And remember, marijuana remains illegal under federal law. I'm a little surprised. I don't know how that might have been discussed or disposed of in that state case there.
Ernie,
as far as probable cause was associated.
Because we have an independent constitution that gives us greater rights in Massachusetts than the Fourth Amendment, sir.
Still has federal law that overrides.
All right. Well, that's another. I think we're going to have to leave that debate for another day. Let me ask you, Ernie Istook, just one last question. I want to give you the last word here. Stephen Epstein, who's here from Normal, on Normal's website, they support legalization of marijuana, and they talk about a controlled market, a legally controlled market for marijuana. My question is to you: wouldn't a legally controlled market be better than an uncontrolled criminal market, which is what we have today?
Well, first of all, you still get the negative consequences when you say a legally controlled market if the laws that they have been supporting for so-called medical marijuana are an example of how loosely they define a controlled market. I think that speaks for itself. That's why they're having problems with the so-called smoke shops in California, the rise in crime in the vicinity of those. The Netherlands is cutting back on their marijuana smoke shops because they find that they are magnets for crime as well. You've got a lot of problems that they want to gloss over, but that are very real problems indeed.
Ernie Istook, thanks so much for joining us today. That's Ernie Istook. He's a former congressman from the Oklahoma 5th District, and he spoke to us from Washington, D.C., where he's a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation. And Stephen Epstein, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
He's the treasurer of MassCAN, the Massachusetts chapter of Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Listeners, I'm sorry we didn't get to many of you who called, but of course the debate continues online at radioboston.org. Feel free to continue the conversation there. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.